You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is World Class Radio. I'm your host, Jordan the Body Fox, and with me today is my man, co-host of Pro Wrestling Recap, Mr. Chris Spezak. Chris, what's up, man?
What's going on, Jordan? Excited to be here, man. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Well, I sure appreciate it, man. I sure appreciate it very much. So, just to give everyone a little backstory about you and I, we actually met through Twitter. We both have wrestling podcasts, and yours has evolved quite nicely over the last few months that we've known each other. But tell us a little bit about Pro Wrestling Recap, how it started, how it's evolved more to, or what it's evolving into starting next week, and what we should be looking towards, and everything like that.
Yeah, well, I met a guy named Soggy Baines. He's a pro wrestler down here in the Houston area with a promotion called Domination Zone Wrestling that's actually on the west side in Katy, Texas, the suburb of Houston. And I'd been working with that promotion for about a year and a half, helping those guys out with some audio-video productions, things like that. And I'd been wanting to do a wrestling podcast for some time because my background is in film and video production, all that type of stuff. And so Soki was a great guy. We'd always hit it off very well, and finally we decided to make the leap and do our own podcast. So that started about 3 or 4 months ago. We started a show called the Pro Wrestling Recap, where we would basically just go through the top headlines of the week from all the various promotions, whether it be WWE, New Japan, anything like that. And eventually we got to a point to where we started interviewing some great people. We had WWE Hall of Famer Rikishi was on the show. We had Shane Taylor just before Ring of Honor came through Texas a couple weeks back. Mysterious Q is a guy who's a really big up-and-comer down here in the Houston area. So, you know, the show took off in a hurry. You know, we were really proud with the direction that it was going. And eventually, with my video background, we decided to do an online show on Periscope, and we started doing that. And that was when things really took off. I think people were very impressed with the production quality of the show. I did a lot of studying up and tried to make it look as slick as possible, and that was where we really started to get some buzz about the show. So as it sort of evolved, Silky and I got together and said, you know what, there's so many wrestling podcasts out there. You know, everybody has a wrestling podcast these days. What if we focused our efforts on the streaming show, the video show? And we talked about it a little bit, and you were one of the guys that really suggested that we stick with that particular route. So that's what we've decided to do. So we've rebranded the show. The Pro Wrestling Recap is no more. It will now be the Spees and the Benchmark Show. My last name's Spezak. My friends have always called me Spees, and Silky goes by the Benchmark of Professional Wrestling in the ring. So the Spees and the Benchmark Show will kick off this Monday, right after Monday Night Raw on YouTube, and you can find us on the web, it's tinyurl.com/speezbenchmark. That's SPEEZ benchmark. tinyurl.com/speezbenchmark will take you to our YouTube channel where you can subscribe and check out the show. Like I said, we'll be live this Monday night after Raw, and we will also be live on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time, so twice a week, for the fans to come and chat with us and talk some wrestling, man. We're really looking forward to it.
That's awesome, dude. I'm kind of embarrassed that I did not realize that you are changing the name of the show. Did you announce that?
No, that's okay. It's been a brand new thing. It's something that Silky and I had talked about from the get-go. And, you know, of course, nobody knows who the hell we are. You know, we're just a couple of wrestling fans. At the heart of it all, we're just wrestling fans like everybody else. And so we went with something that was a little more indicative of what the program was about. But, you know, when we got right down to it, we said, you know what the hell? Let's just go with what let's go with our names and see what happens. So yeah, totally no big thing. We changed our Twitter over. It's if you search for @PWRecap, you'll still go to our new Twitter handle, which is actually @SpeezBenchmark. So no problem there. But yeah, look us up on Twitter, man. Check us out. We're always excited to chat with new fans and looking forward to meeting as many new people as we can.
That's awesome, man. That is awesome. So by the time this show airs, which will be about probably about 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2.5 hours, something like that, I will have, I will look y'all up on Twitter. I already follow y'all, so you just changed your Twitter handle. So I will definitely tweet out about y'all being on the show and everything like that. So, I didn't even realize, because I haven't been, I was telling you before we got on the show, I haven't been doing the show full time the last like 4 days. Like I took like 3 of the last 5 days off doing some reformatting stuff. And then, you know, I'm training to eventually get my old ass in the ring and some other stuff. So I've had to take a few days off, but that also means that I haven't been on Twitter as much as I normally am. And so I had no idea that y'all changed the show name, but I actually really like that. It seems like very personable, if that makes any sense at all. You know what I mean? Like one of my favorite shows that I listen to is Going in Raw, and they
those guys are great, and they've been around doing it for a long, long time, man. Very successful show.
Absolutely, yeah. And Steven Larson, like a lot of their Twitter handles and Instagram and Facebooks and stuff, you know, they have Going in Raw, but most of the time, you know, you see stuff being posted from their accounts. It's like Steven Larson, and with them using their real names, like I just find that very personable. And immediately when I heard your show's new name, I immediately felt like, oh man, that sounds, Pro Wrestling Recap is a really cool name. I really dug that name, but it sounds like way more personable than Pro Wrestling Recap or World Class Radio. So I really dig it, man. I really, really dig it.
At the end of the day, you're always trying to do something to brand yourself and make yourself stick out. And, you know, when we first got into it, obviously we wanted to name the show something that would make it very obvious what it was about. So having something that was, you know, pro wrestling related in the title definitely made it an easy pick as far as the name goes. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're in this for the long haul. You know, this is something that he and I both enjoy doing. You know, Silky's been wrestling for about 12 years. I've been involved with the promotion out here for a couple of years and been in film and video for, gosh, upwards of 20 years now. I'm showing my age here, but you know, it's something I've always enjoyed, this kind of stuff. I've always enjoyed being involved in some manner of production. And, you know, with my son getting me back into wrestling not too long ago, yeah, it's been several years now, but, you know, wrestling seemed like the logical way to go. So we're definitely enjoying ourselves.
That's really cool, man. That's really cool.
I want to know if I can interrupt you one more time. This is the first time that we've spoken since you got into the wrestling school, man. How the hell is that going? That's got to be exciting stuff for you.
Man, I appreciate you asking. Yeah, that it is. It's been a lot of fun. It's, this is kind of embarrassing, but so last week, I feel like I'm a really very athletic guy. Like I'm, you know, I've always played sports, everything like that. But, as, you know, all of us wrestling fans know, like, this sport that we love is, like, really different. And so we were doing, practicing back bumps, where I was learning not just regular, or a front bump, where you do a front flip in the air. You know, it's kind of like simulating just a regular vertical suplex, or maybe a snap vertical suplex.
Yeah, and, like, or getting a hip toss or something like that. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And like when I watch it on TV, like for the last, you know, 25 years that I've been a fan, I had, you know, just a couple year break in there, but basically, you know, I've been a fan for, you know, 20 years, and I've always looked at it, and if I see a bad match or something, I'm like, man, this guy fucking sucks. Like, how did he get on TV and stuff? And then when I get into the ring and I'm trying to learn how to do a front bump and stuff, I'm like, oh shit, like you have to totally turn off your brain and do this kind of stuff, because it's not human nature to just land flat on your back on a hard surface and not try to brace your fall. So
yeah, and that's it's very terrifying. Yeah, because I've actually jumped in the ring a few times with Silky and done some very minor training, you know, just to get a feel for it. I actually refereed out here now, and I'll tell you, everything in your mind tells you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Because, you know, Silky's sitting there telling me, okay, what I want you to do is just jump as high as you can, and you're going to do a front flip and land on your back, try to get your feet and your back to hit the mat at the same time, and let's see what you got. And it's absolutely fucking terrifying. Like, it is absolutely, my body is saying, no, don't do that, don't do that. And it's so, I had the biggest mental block about that. It's, finally, Silky had to, you know, give me a hip toss to get me to do it, because it's just, like I said, your brain tells you that that is not a wise thing to do. So it doesn't matter how athletic you are, because it was the same thing with me, man. I played sports coming up, and you get inside that ring, and all of a sudden, it seems like a really long way down when you think about jumping as high as you can and flipping over and landing on your back. It's a terrifying thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. What's funny is in my class there is, I think there's five more of us, and I don't mean this to sound sexist, because I'm not saying it because she's a female. I'm saying it because she's like 5'1" and weighs like 90 pounds. But there is a female in my class that generally, or when we were doing the bumps anyway, she was in front of me in line. We were kind of doing, you know, like a line, and you know, you do it and you go to the end of the line. But she just did it with ease, and I was like almost kind of pissed at her, because I was like, this girl is 5'0", and she just jumped up, and she probably jumped higher than I can. She probably got more ups than I do to begin with, and she took that bump her first time ever trying it like a fucking champ. Like, she should go straight to NXT or something. And then here I am having to like do a handstand and you know, just like fall down to like try to teach my body how to do it. And I was just like so aggravated. Like,
yeah, it's a strange thing. It's funny because, again, you look at it on TV and you really get, and that was one of the reasons that I wanted to do it, was you really get an idea for just how difficult it is and how easy the guys who are good at this make it look. You know, I was a drummer for years, and I've been playing the drums off and on for a good 25 years. And, you know, one of the things that always impressed me about musicians were the guys that were able to do just the most amazing things and just make it look like they weren't trying at all. They weren't even breaking a sweat. And you look at these guys having now spent some time in the ring and learned how to run the ropes and learned how to take bumps, although not very well, and learned some of those things, you really get a whole different appreciation for just how good those guys are, because they make it look so easy. Even things like those bumps and locking up and the footwork. I mean, I didn't have any idea how absolutely precise your footwork has to be in order for all this shit to look good. And these guys just make it look like it's nothing. And it really gives you a whole new perspective on wrestling when you take a close look and actually try to do some of the shit yourself. And I'm not advocating anybody try this at home, you know. Go ahead and put that out there right now. But, you know, when you step into that ring and you give it a shot yourself, it's a whole different world in there, man.
Man, I couldn't say it better, man. I absolutely, like, I just have a newfound respect. And when you said, the last thing I'll say is when you said you look at people that make it look easy and you just have a whole new respect for them, the person that I thought about when I started having that thought in my head a couple of weeks ago when I first started was Seth Rollins, because that guy makes what he does look so simple, almost like he's not even trying, and it's just absolutely amazing. He's truly one of the best in the world, and that, like I said, that was the first person I thought of whenever I started thinking about that. Like, man, I've got a whole new respect for these guys that do this 4 days a week, you know, on national television on Monday or Tuesday, and then, you know, do two or three house shows, and not only do they make it look easy, but just you know, how tough they are from being able to do that for, you know, 3 or 4 days a week for the next 20 or 30 years. Absolutely insane, you know?
Yeah, it's a special breed for sure. Those guys are something else, no question about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I just wanted to ask a few questions before, you know, we're not going to do like a traditional SmackDown review. We're just going to kind of breeze through it because, especially with this being our first show together, like, I really want to get to, you know, kind of get into your head about, like, what you and I agree about in terms of wrestling and disagree and stuff like that. And I want people that, that take the time to download the show to do the same thing, you know, because I want, if people agree or disagree with you, I want them to look at you and be like, well, man, I'd like to check out his show, you know what I mean? Like I was telling you, I think we had, I checked the episode that my wife was on Tuesday. We were closing in on 1,000 downloads in just 48 hours, and so I was very proud of that. So I was like,
absolutely, man. Yeah, you've got quite the audience, man. It's been impressive to watch you guys grow as well, man. It's been a lot of fun.
I appreciate it very much. And so I was just like, you know, I wanted those people to the people that tune in every day. I wanted them to get to know Chris along with me. So for future episodes and stuff, we can, you know, we might have like a themed show in the future, like, you know, how to get Roman Reigns over or the best way to beat Brock Lesnar and stuff like that. So my idea, that was my thought process when I thought of a couple of questions for you. So my first question is, what was your favorite era of wrestling? Was it, you know, most people don't say the Ruthless Aggression era, but was it the Ruthless Aggression era or the Attitude era, the Golden Age, you know? What was your favorite time in wrestling?
You know, I was born in 76. I'm 42 years old, giving away my age here. but, you know, I grew up in, you know, obviously in the 80s is when I started watching wrestling. And, of course, you know, that was right around the time that Vince started his takeover of all the territories. But, you know, I was still lucky enough to go to some shows here in Houston at the Sam Houston Coliseum back when they had Houston Wrestling, and there was a gentleman down here by the name of Paul Bosch, who ran Houston Wrestling for years, and Paul Bosch is a legendary figure in the wrestling world, and is one of the most revered public figures here in Houston, and we've got a handful of guys that you know that just do some really great things. It's something about this town. This town really pulls together. Especially during tough times, but also, you know, it's just something about this community. They always step up and help each other. And Paul Bosch was one of those guys, and he's still an absolutely revered figure in this part of the country, as well as in the wrestling world as a whole, because of what he was able to do with Houston Wrestling. So I was fortunate enough to get to go to the Sam Houston Coliseum and watch Houston Wrestling during the territory days, the Houston territory. And I can remember watching guys like, you know, a younger Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Ted DiBiase and Kamala and guys like that. And, you know, I just remember that place was packed to the rafters every single Friday night. And they would tape the show, and you would see it on Channel 39 down here in Houston. They'd play it on Saturday night. They played again on Sunday morning. And it was a staple of Houston television for, you know, 35 years. You could see it all the time. So, you know, my fondest memories are those. You know, when I was a kid and I got to go with my old man, you know, my dad passed away back in 2003. But one of the things that we did a lot when we were younger was go to the wrestling shows whenever they came through. So that particular era, you know, the Hogan era, right when WWE was first, you know, getting started. And, you know, the end of the territory days, those guys like, you know, like I mentioned, Jim Duggan and Wahoo McDaniel and guys like that. Yeah, I've always got a special place in my heart for those guys because that was my first exposure to wrestling, into the wrestling business. And of course, you know, back then, there was still, you know, fans weren't smartened up like they are now. Most of us still thought, especially when you were a kid like me, that this was real. And you hated these bastards so bad. I remember I absolutely fucking hated the Iron Sheik. I just thought he was the most, oh God, I couldn't, the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff, man, those two guys, I couldn't stand those bastards. They were always going to screw over Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage or whoever it was. And it was, you know, looking back on it, it was brilliant. It worked so well because those guys were such great heels. The fans hated them. The fans legitimately wanted to hurt those guys. I mean, that's how it was back in those days. So if I had to pick a particular era, you know, obviously that's going to be one that's a fond memory for me. But I'll tell you the thing that got me back into wrestling. I was an educator for a lot of years, and there was a young man that I taught. He was a senior in high school at the time, and he is the nephew of one of the politicians down here in Houston. So his aunt used to get tickets to just about any event that you can think of. And he came to me one day and he said, "Mr. Spezak, I got 2 tickets to WrestleMania this weekend." And this would have been WrestleMania 17 in the Astrodome, the one with The Rock and Stone Cold as the main event.
With the turn, said, right? With the double turn?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And he says, "You know, I got a couple tickets to WrestleMania." I'm like, "Oh, man, that's going to be great. You're going to have a blast." You know, he said, "Well, you know, my parents, they had to go out of town on business. My dad had something come up at the last minute, so they're gone. And they said I couldn't go unless I had an adult to take me. So, you know, I was wondering if maybe you'd go see WrestleMania with me." And I'm thinking, hell yes, I'll go see WrestleMania. Are you kidding me? That's the coolest thing ever. So me and this kid head over to the Astrodome to check out what would go down as probably the best WrestleMania of all time. I mean, you had the Rock and Stone Cold main event. My favorite match of the night and still probably my favorite all-time match is TLC 2 when you had the Hardys and the Dudleys and Edge and Christian. You know, that was the match where you had the just ridiculous spear from Edge on Jeff Hardy from on top of that gargantuan ladder.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Bubba Ray and Matt Hardy got pushed through 2 sets of tables stacked on top of each other way outside there. I mean, that place was just on fire for that match. But yeah, it was a great WrestleMania. So that's definitely another fond memory for me, getting to go to that show and see some of my favorites. I was a huge Rock fan. So, you know, I was probably in the 25% or so that were chanting Rocky while the other 75% were chanting for Austin, you know, being in Texas like we were. But yeah, that was a great event. That's definitely high up there in my memories of wrestling as well.
So quick question about that WrestleMania 17 that you were at. It was in Houston, and you said that you think you were part of the 25% that was pro-Rock in that. So do you really think there was 25% that was pro-Rock? Because that seems, you know, when I'm thinking in my head, like I'm thinking like 99% Stone Cold being in Texas and stuff like that. But I do understand that The Rock was, I mean, almost second to none, basically. So, but do you think, would you be facetious, or do you really think there was 25% that was pro-Rock that night?
No, there were a lot of pro-Rock fans there. I mean, really? I'm not sure how it came across on the broadcast, but, you know, both of those guys were such megastars at that particular point in time that, you know, either one of those chants would start, whether it was Austin, or Rocky, you know, whichever one it was, you know, certain groups of fans would start up a certain chant, and the other crowd would start chanting their guy, and you just had those two chanting on top of each other quite often. But, you know, listen, when both of those guys came out, I mean, they came out to huge pops from the crowd. I mean, the crowd loved them both, and that was one of the better builds that I can think of in probably in WWF history. I mean, the lead up to that match was so good that really it didn't matter so much that both guys were faces at the time, because, you know, you had The Rock coming in as the champ, and obviously he was so great on the mic that, you know, he had a huge following in and of itself. And then, of course, Austin, the way he sold it was, "I have to win this title. I need that championship back." And I don't know how much of it you recall, but there were so many times where those two would jump in the ring and look like they were going to attack each other, and then they wouldn't. You know, it was just almost like, "I'm just letting you know that I'm here, and I can kick your ass whenever I want to, but I'm here, and I'm waiting in the wings." And they did that for a few weeks, and then eventually one of them, you know, snapped, and you know, I think it was Austin. You know, first hits the Rock with a stunner, and then the next week the Rock hits Austin with a stunner, and then Austin hits the Rock with a rock bottom. I mean, it was just the build up to it was so great. So by the time the actual match happened, I think both of those guys were so ridiculously over with the fans. But yeah, I mean, you know, it could have been a little bit more in favor of Stone Cold, but I was actually surprised to see how many guys were rooting for the Rock. I mean, I was definitely one of them, and I think that just the fact that both of those guys were such megastars at the time, you really couldn't go wrong rooting for either one of them, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. That makes perfect sense. That's so cool, man, that you were there. That's something that I haven't got to experience as WrestleMania. I've promised my son, he's a huge wrestling fan, which is, that kind of leads into my next question, but I promised him two things, that I would take him to a WrestleMania one day, and I would take him to a Royal Rumble, because that, you know, being, he'll be 10 in October, so being a 9-year-old kid, he absolutely loves Royal Rumbles. He thinks that's just the coolest thing ever in wrestling. You know, every 90 seconds, someone new is coming in, and it's so cool watching him, because he still believes basically, he thinks that it's I don't like using the words real and fake on the show. You know what I mean? Just cause I think that's like, it, you know, like, even though it's not real in quotations, I mean, that shit is real, you know? And, but he thinks, you know, that the match is going on, you know, I can't think of a better term, but he thinks that it's real. So, you know what I mean? And it's so cool to watch him get so into it and be yelling at the TV and have so much desire to want to see Seth Rollins win, or, you know, it's just, it's really cool. But, my question I was going to ask is, you said that your son got you back into it. So when did you fall out of wrestling, out of your wrestling fandom, and for how long? And when did you come back?
You know, it was not too long after my father passed away. That was a really rough time for me personally. It was 2003 was when my old man died, and it was just I'd never experienced anybody close to me passing away. And I actually had like five people that were either, you know, close family members or very good friends of mine who died within a 1-year period in 2003. It was just completely insane. So that was a really rough time for me personally. I had a lot of things going on that just took precedence, and I didn't do much of anything. I mean, it was a really down time for me. And then in early 2004, that was when we found out that my wife was pregnant. And so my son was born in October of 2004. So when you'll know this, and so will all the listeners who have kids, when you become a parent for the first time, that takes precedence over a lot of shit, and you don't have
Absolutely.
Much time for anything else. So yeah, there was a little time in there, and that was when I focused a fair amount of my time on my filmmaking and doing those types of things as well. So, you know, during that era, I would say, you know, during the Cena Superman era, I guess you could say, is when I was out of it for a little bit, which is why to this day I don't have a huge problem with John Cena. You know, I think the guy's great. I think the fans, Cena's going to be one of those guys like Kurt Angle. When he comes back, you know, 10, 15 years from now, they're still going to sing John Cena sucks, you know, just like they still say you suck to Kurt Angle.
Right.
And it's just going to be one of those terms of endearment. You know, I think, you know, a good portion of the fan base that sings John Cena sucks doesn't really think John Cena sucks.
No.
It's just one of those things you do at a wrestling match. So yeah, I miss that era of Super Cena getting booked over everybody. But you know, it was a little bit before, I would say, WrestleMania 31. You know, just before the Seth Rollins cash in at WrestleMania was when my son started taking an interest. And it's funny because at the time, you know, my wife, and, you know, I don't feel bad saying this because I have a huge crush on Nikki Bella, but my wife has a huge crush on The Rock. She just thinks The Rock is the greatest thing ever. And so, you know, every time a new Rock movie comes out, we have to go see it that opening weekend because the wife wants to see The Rock. It's just one of those things. So we had actually, gone to see some movie with The Rock, and I was talking to my son about him. And, of course, my son thinks he's great because his mom thinks he's great. And I said, well, you know, The Rock used to be a wrestler. And he said, "No, really?" And so, of course, with, you know, the internet, I started going back and showing him some of The Rock's, you know, funny promos from back in the day. Well, he just thought that was the greatest thing ever. And my son is the type that just, when he finds something new that he's interested in, he just completely engulfs himself in whatever that particular topic is. And so he was all about wrestling. And it's funny because he's 13 years old now, and he digs the current product. But he's one of those kids that has an appreciation for wrestling history and would almost rather watch a Monday Night Raw from 15 years ago just to learn something new about guys that are, you know, maybe still thumping around now, or guys that he'd heard of but he'd never really seen. You know, he's just kind of a wrestling historical buff like that, even at the age of 13. It's pretty funny. But yeah, it was right around that time when Rollins did the cash-in where I really started following it. I mean, I'd always kept up with it to a certain extent, but as far as watching on a weekly basis and really, really paying close attention to what was going on again, it was around that time when I started jumping back into it, which was a great time. I mean, that particular WrestleMania 31 was so good with the, you know, the Intercontinental Title ladder match, which I'm a big fan of those. I wish they'd do those every WrestleMania. I think those are great.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the Rollins cash-in was just fantastic as well. So it was a good jumping back in point, I think. The start of the Rollins era, and, you know, a lot of really really good stuff going on around that time.
Man, I did not realize that we have a lot more in common than what you and I probably realize. Because I came back into wrestling within a year of you. I came right before WrestleMania 30, and my son got me back into it as well. So I completely relate to you in that aspect. That's really cool.
Well, you know, you mentioned taking your son to a WrestleMania. I actually got to take my son to his first WrestleMania this year. We were in New Orleans.
Oh, and, man, that's so cool.
We spent a few days there. Yeah, it was a blast, man. It was so much fun. You know, we went to WrestleCon a couple days before, so that was his big bucket list item, because he is a huge Bret Hart fan, and Bret Hart was at WrestleCon, and we got to meet and take pictures with the Hitman, and, you know, he got his little toy Winged Eagle belt autographed by the Hitman, so he was super psyched about that, and got to meet Sting, and, you know, saw Hacksaw Jim Duggan again. You know, that was another big one for me, you know, just from my childhood.
But, oh, yeah.
You know, it was a lot of fun getting to be around all those guys. And then and we went to NXT on the Saturday night. And, of course, you know, NXT New Orleans was just ridiculously good. And then WrestleMania on Sunday, man, it was a hell of a weekend. We really, really enjoyed ourselves.
That's really cool, man. The other thing that I was going to say was, we also share in common that our wives have got crushes, big crushes on wrestlers, because my wife has got the biggest crush on John Morrison, Johnny Mundo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I took her to her first wrestling show before I actually started working for World Class. I took her to a World Class show, and I think at the time I was kind of waiting to hear back to see if I had got the publicist position that I had applied for. And she got to see John Morrison for the first time, and she's a big Jim Morrison fan. Like, she's read a couple biographies on Jim Morrison and stuff, and so when she's seen John Morrison come out, and I could tell she thought, like, where do I kind of know this guy from? And I was like, you know, his gimmick is that he, or his gimmick used to be anyway, that he's, like, the wrestling Jim Morrison. And you get to see it kind of, her eyes light up, and she got it, you know, and she's not a wrestling fan. So, like, it was kind of cool to see her, like, kind of get it, you know what I mean? Like, that it's a soap opera, you know? And anyway,
yeah,
she's
exactly.
she's just like, I like that guy. And so we've always found that funny, and it's funny because she was a big, the show Dallas, in the 80s that was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah, well, you know, they remade it like 6 years ago, 5 years ago for a couple of seasons in kind of like a modern way. And my wife really, really liked that remake, and her mom really liked the original, so they like kind of watched it every week. Well, anyway, next month, my promotion, World Class Revolution, has got a show July 21st at the South Fork Ranch, where Dallas was shot and what it was based on and everything, and they're doing like, or we are doing like this, Jim Ross is going to be there, and we're going to do this kind of dinner theater-esque kind of thing in between matches where Boone the Bounty Hunter is investigating to see who shot JR, just like the original Dallas, right?
Oh, that's great.
Well, Boone the Bounty Hunter is played by John Morrison. And so I was telling my wife all this, and she was like already trying to get online. She was like, we're going. She was already like trying to map out how to get to South Fork like 6 weeks before the show. You know what I mean? On Google Maps.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah,
I'm gonna have to head up for that one as well, man. That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. If you, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it off air. You know, but yeah, if you want to come, man, absolutely. I would love to have you up, dude. That'd be absolutely cool, man.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. And John Morrison, you know, to jump in real quickly on him, you know, I haven't met him personally. He's one of the modern guys that I would like to meet, just because. I mentioned Mysterious Q. He's a guy down here at Reality of Wrestling, Booker T's promotion down here in Houston. And Q's wrestled against John Morrison on a couple different occasions, I believe. And, you know, everybody that I've talked to, it's funny to see him, and he looks like kind of a cocky, arrogant kind of guy. But everyone that I've talked to that's been in the ring with him or been around him in any capacity at all, talk about just what a great guy he is, that he's just a really nice guy. He's super easy to get along with. You know, Q was talking about how, you know, he was really nervous because they kind of threw John Morrison into the mix at the last minute. And, you know, he's thinking, oh, shit, you know, this is a big deal. But he was, you know, cracking jokes in the ring and everything, just keeping it real loose. So, you know, good choice by the wife. He seems like a good guy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I thought as well. I've got to meet him a couple of times backstage since I've been working in wrestling, and I just think he was just like the coolest guy. But my wife hasn't got to meet him yet, so I'm excited for her to come to the show with me, and I hope you get to make it too, man. Yeah, we'll have to talk more about that. I would love to have you up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So to talk just a little bit about SmackDown, what I kind of want to do is just kind of run through it and kind of touch on each segment that was going on, but really more so to talk about, you know, the storylines and the wrestlers that are in those segments, and just kind of get your feel of you know, what you think about those guys and stuff like that. We're not really going to talk about too much about what happened on SmackDown. You know, we normally do that, and but, you know, like I said, I'm kind of changing the format a little bit, and so I want to get to know my co-hosts and stuff like that, and I want everyone to get to know you and some other people that I'm going to have on the show. So if that sounds cool with you, then we'll get started on that.
Sure thing, yeah.
But yeah, so SmackDown started yesterday with Miz TV and the Bludgeon Brothers. So my first question is, it's going to start with a statement, but the Miz, in my opinion, is probably the best thing on SmackDown. What are your thoughts on the Miz? Do you think he's overhyped? Do you think he's that? Or do you think he's, I mean, just like the second coming of Jesus Christ? What do you think?
No, yeah. I mean, look, The Miz is great. And one of the things I really appreciate about The Miz is that we're in a strange era in wrestling, in that there are a lot of heels who want to be over with the fans, who want to be popular guys, who want to sell merchandise, you know. And again, you know, showing my age here, when I was a kid, you couldn't get an Iron Sheik t-shirt.
Absolutely not.
Like, nobody wanted one, first of all, because he was a bastard and you hated him and you were supposed to hate him. And nowadays, it's different now. You know, I believe it was Don Callis that said, you know, we're in, I don't want to say he used the word dangerous, but he said we're in an awkward time, in that heels are being made to be cool guys, and the fans want to dig the cool guys. And that really fucks psychology of a lot of these feuds, because, you know, having participated in a much, much smaller scale with the promotion down here, Domination Zone Wrestling, you know, and sitting in on the booking meetings and everything like that, you know, these rivalries and storylines are built around the fact that this is the heel and this is the face, and this is who we expect to be cheered and this is who we expect to be booed. And so when the fans kind of turn that on its ear, it can make it very difficult. Especially, we talked to Shane Taylor about this from Ring of Honor. You know, does it mess with the psychology of the match when you're going in and you're supposed to be a heel, but the fans are cheering you? And so what I really appreciate about The Miz is he's definitely over with the fans. The fans love The Miz, but he also understands that they're not supposed to love him. So he'll have his moments where the fans cheer something that he does, or they like what he's doing. You know, they chant along with his little catchphrases, you know, and scream Miz TV when they're supposed to. But he'll always bring it back to, you're not supposed to be cheering for me. You know, he'll take a dig at the local sports team. You know, he'll take a dig at the town or something like that. Turn those people against him. And I really appreciate that about The Miz. And to me, that's what makes him one of the great heels on the roster right now. I would put Kevin Owens in a similar vein, in that I'm a huge Kevin Owens fan, but at the same time, like, I know that I'm not supposed to cheer for Kevin Owens, and he'll make sure that I know that I'm not supposed to cheer for him by the way that he talks and the way that he acts and everything like that. So, yeah, as far as The Miz on SmackDown, I agree with you. I think he's as good as there is right now in the WWE as a whole, in terms of a heel that can get everyone's attention, who can hold everyone's attention, who can build to a match, you know, to build anticipation for a match. I think he's done that brilliantly with his feud with Daniel Bryan, and you know those two are going to end up going at it at some point.
Oh,
but
yeah,
the fact that they've been going at each other like they have been is great. And so much of that, you know, say what you will about Daniel Bryan, he's not the greatest guy on the microphone in terms of selling you on a match. You know, he's going to get the crowd hyped and everything like that, but in terms of guys that are going to sell tickets because you want to see him go fight, Bryan's not going to do that on the microphone, at least. Miz can do that. Miz can make you interested in a fight with a broomstick if he has to. He's such a good talker. So, yeah, he's fantastic, man. I'm a huge, huge fan of The Miz's work. He does a great job for sure.
Oh, dude, I agree with you 100%, man, 100%. I couldn't say it better myself. I can't believe that I don't remember what year was it that he and John Cena main evented WrestleMania. Was it 2007? Does that sound right? Or 2010, maybe? It was during the time that I had fallen out a little bit as a wrestling fan, but I got to, I was living in Fort Worth at the time, and I got to go to the American Airlines Arena and see a Raw that was being hosted. It was that, you know, during that guest host phase that they did, and Stone Cold was hosting, and I got to see The Miz and John Cena leading up to WrestleMania. But anyway, looking back at how bad that main event between John Cena and The Miz was, or how bad I think it was, it's insane to think about how good of a character The Miz has grown into compared to what he was back then.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I know it was WrestleMania 27, so probably 2011 or so.
That sounds right.
But yeah, he's really come so far. And you look at him early on, his promos early on were just awful. I mean, they were terrible. It's a funny story. There's a kid that goes to school with my son, and his mother, it turned out, heard us talking about wrestling. And, you know, my son had mentioned The Miz, and she said, "That's not the Mike Miz, you know, the guy that was on The Real World." I said, "Yeah, that same guy. He's a wrestler now." She goes, "I went to college with that guy. I knew him in college." And I said, "Really?" She goes, "Oh yeah, he was such a douche." And she had this picture saved of him on her phone at some party, you know, when he's in college, and he looks like the quintessential douchey college guy. I mean, it was so perfect. And when you think about it, his character nowadays is just kind of like a douchey college guy that's not really grown up.
Yeah.
And it's so, you know, they say the gimmicks work best when it's, you know, it's something that's very close to you. So I'm sure he's, you know, he's not altogether disappointed with how things turned out in that regard. But yeah, he's come such a long way. He's he's great. He's made himself into a star, you know, and that's always impressive to see guys who aren't going to get over because they're, you know, they're cut, you know, or they're super huge, like, you know, Braun Strowman type guy, or, you know, anything like that. He's just gotten over because he's got such a great personality. He's got such a magnetic personality, and he's able to talk his way into anything. So, you know, kudos to him for what he's been able to do.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, man. So next on SmackDown, we had a match between Rusev and Xavier Woods. My question is, it looks like Rusev is going to challenge AJ Styles, I believe, at Extreme Rules. So he's finally getting his world heavyweight, or his WWE heavyweight championship match. He's finally getting a world title opportunity ever since the Happy Rusev Day has, you know, hit it big and stuff. But it seems, if you watch this match, it seems as though the crowd wasn't 100% behind him. Almost like maybe WWE waited just a little bit too long before they tried to capitalize on this Happy Rusev Day and, you know, him being so over. Was that just me, or do you feel like maybe WWE waited a little too long to pull the trigger?
Well, I think Rusev's another one of those guys, you know, that I was talking about earlier, where, you know, is he a heel or is he a face?
Yeah, okay.
Because when it comes right down to it, I mean, for all intents and purposes, Rusev, the way his character has been brought up anyway, is a heel. I mean, I guess you could say that just based on, and I base that more on what I see from Aiden English more than anything else.
Absolutely, I agree.
But you would see, if you had to choose, you would probably say, okay, well, that guy's supposed to be the bad guy. You know, if you're just a layman, somebody who doesn't watch wrestling all the time. But, again, he's another one that the fans have taken to. And I don't get the whole Rusev Day thing. I mean, I understand it, but I think fans just like to chant certain things, you know? And Rusev Day has become the cool chant. But really, I mean, what is it? It's just, you know, every day is Rusev Day. Okay, well, that's cool. But, you know, as far as it, people talk about how it's the most over thing in wrestling right now. Well, just because they chant Rusev Day, like, come on, what are we talking about?
It's a good point.
To take nothing away from Rusev, because, you know, we've mentioned it on our show several times. Let's not forget, this guy is just a few years removed from coming out to face John Cena at WrestleMania in a fucking tank.
In a fucking tank, man.
I mean, this dude is a badass. So, you know, I love Rusev. I love everything about him. He's a big guy that can move. He's so good in the ring, and I'm glad to see him finally getting a shot. Now, as far as the fans being behind him or whatever, again, that's I think where things get tricky in this modern age, where we don't have a clear cut face and a clear cut heel. And if you look back, there's everybody points to Stone Cold, because Stone Cold was kind of, you know, heelish behavior, even though he was so over with the fans. But that there's nobody in wrestling today that has that kind of popularity that Stone Cold had, at least not in the WWE. That guy's popularity was off the charts, and he could get away with it because of the following that he had. You know, guys like Rusev and some of these other guys who you might call, you know, tweeners, kind of in between being a face and a heel, that's really, really difficult to pull off, and there's a lot of guys like that nowadays. So, you know, I'd almost prefer to see Rusev just go full on heel, you know, even though the fans are, or full on face, you know, because the fans are behind him. One of the two. But if the stories that work, and this is my opinion, and people may disagree, but to me, the stories that work best in this day and age and all throughout wrestling history are the ones where there's a very clear-cut good guy and there's a very clear-cut bad guy.
Absolutely.
And so with a guy like Rusev, I mean, Xavier Woods is obviously a face. You know, the New Day is obviously over his faces. So you put him in there against Rusev, well, who am I supposed to cheer for? You know, who's supposed to be the bad guy? And I think it's, you know, that's where you start to get situations like you had on Tuesday, where you think to yourself, well, shit, you know, you'd figure more people would be behind Rusev, but that would mean they'd have to cheer against the New Day. They'd have to cheer against Xavier Woods. And that makes it tricky as a fan, as to, you know, where my allegiance is supposed to lie.
That's such a good point, man. I did not even think about it like that. I seen the booze, and the lack of cheers, and I just had tunnel vision, I guess you could say. So I'm so glad that I asked that question, and to you specifically, because you just broke that down perfectly. I totally dig it. I can already tell you and I are going to have a lot of fun, detailed, themed shows in the episodes, rather, in our future, man. I can absolutely tell already.
That's great, man. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
I'm glad, man. I'm glad because I'm having a lot of fun on this episode already. So I have a yes or no question is the next. Rusev's match was against Xavier Woods. Let's say that you are the head booker. You don't answer to anyone. You're Vince McMahon in the WWE. In the next 365 days, in the next year, do you break up the New Day, yes or no?
Yes.
I dig it. I want to leave it right there because I think that's going to be an episode that I would like to have with you sometime. It's like going into detail about some stables and being heel and babyface and stuff like that. So we'll save that for that episode.
And listen, not to say I don't love the New Day. I absolutely adore the New Day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love everything about those guys. And, you know, let's face it, their feud with the Usos is one of the best tag team feuds in modern history by far. I mean, those guys just put on great matches all the time. Listen, there's not a lot not to like about the New Day. They're just fantastic. But yeah, it's you know, there's plenty for those guys to do as singles wrestlers, I believe. And I think the time is right for them to go out there and see what they can do.
Absolutely. I agree. So the next segment, we see after Rusev, he cuts a promo and stuff like that, but we see Lana and Naomi backstage, and the cast of GLOW shows up. GLOW being the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, which is a kind of a loosely, it's a Netflix show about the Gorgeous Lady of Wrestling, which was an all-female wrestling promotion in the 80s, but it's kind of a docu-series, but not really. Like, it's, you know, just loosely telling. It's based on a true story. That's what I'm trying to think of.
There you go. Yeah.
I couldn't figure out how I wanted to word that, because I was like, it's not really a docu-series, but, like, it does tell a true story in a sense. But that was my question. So do you watch GLOW, and did you like it?
Oh, yeah, I thought GLOW was great. I don't see it so much as a wrestling show. You know, it's one of those where the wrestling is sort of the backdrop to a story. It's about the characters.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah.
some really great characters in the show, and I think the way that they presented the story is great. Very, very funny show. I mean, the guy that plays the promoter, I forget his name off the top of my head, but good God, he's so funny.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed. I know the second season is getting ready to drop soon. In fact, I think it starts tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I want to start this Friday.
Tomorrow, June 29th.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed season one. I thought it was really good. You know, again, I'm old enough to remember GLOW when it was actually on TV.
Oh, really?
You know, of course, Ivory. Oh, yeah, man, I remember it as a kid. You know, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And of course, you know, Ivory just recently inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Yeah, got former GLOW champion. Yeah. Yeah, she held their big title, right?
I believe so. But
either way, at any rate, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that horrible song that they sang at the beginning. And of course, when I was a kid, that was like the coolest song ever. You know, all these women in the ring as wrestlers, and they're rapping and singing this song. I mean, it was so cheesy when you look back on it. But yeah, it's a great show. If you guys haven't checked it out, by all means, check out GLOW. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I concur. So my next question is, so Jeff Hardy issues an open challenge and Sanity answers, and he ends up facing Eric Young, if I remember right. If you watch NXT, like, it's really stable-driven in a sense now. Like, you have Undisputed Era, and for a while, Roderick Strong. I mean, not, excuse me. You have Authors of Pain, which is a tag team, but for a while, like, Authors or Roderick Strong was with them for a bit, at least for War Games. You have Sanity. You have the Undisputed Era. Do you think that idea was kind of taken from New Japan? Because, you know, New Japan, just about everybody is in a stable over there. Or do you think that's just, it was just kind of a random occurrence and that's just how it fell?
I wouldn't say that it was a random thing, but I'm not so sure that to say that they took it from New Japan, that's one of the things that I spoke with Silky about, because, you know, one of my, I don't want to say knocks against New Japan, but one of the things that I don't enjoy about New Japan is the number of multi-man tag team matches that they have. I mean, it's just insane how many matches on their cards are, you know, six-man tag matches or eight-man tag matches, and it all revolves around these stables. And And I wasn't aware of this, but Silky, you know, actually knows some of the guys that have been over there. And, you know, these stables in Japan, it's more than just we get together at the shows and we wrestle. I mean, those guys train together. They do everything together. So it has a whole different meaning over there than what it does here stateside. So, you know, as to whether or not they, you know, kind of stole that idea from New Japan, I don't know about that. You know, it's always been... There's always been some manner of stable around wrestling. You know, obviously it went sky high with the NWO and eventually crashed back down to earth when they had 5 million different NWO groups. But
and 19 members per group.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and that's another thing. You know, the Bullet Club is the same thing. You know, we're upwards of 20 guys that have been in the Bullet Club over the years as well. You know, at some point, I don't know, maybe the Bullet Club's still so over with the fans, I don't know that they'll ever, you know, get away from that. But yeah, you know, you have to have a place for them, and you have to have somebody for them to compete with. And right now, I think it's working well in terms of, you know, certainly what Undisputed Era is doing in NXT works well. I'm not as sold on Sanity, just because it doesn't seem entirely clear where they're headed or what they're doing. You know, for Eric Young to come up with Sanity and then lose almost immediately, you know, they lost that six-man tag match against Jeff Hardy and the Usos.
Yeah.
That doesn't really do Sanity any favors, you know, when you bring them up and you have them, you know, lose their first big match. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. You know, that's been one of the tough things for me to watch as a fan, and I try to watch as a fan and not a booker, because I'm not a booker, you know, and 99% of the guys on Twitter that wish they were bookers couldn't book a show if they saved their lives, you know? And
right.
It's a lot more difficult than you would think.
Oh, yeah.
And not to insult anybody, but, you know, let's face it, there's a reason there's only a handful of people that have ever done it over the years.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's been one of the tough things for me as a fan. I was a huge fan of the tag team division in NXT. You know, when you had Gargano and Ciampa, and you had American Alpha, and you had the Revival. I'm a huge Revival fan. I love those guys. And for some reason, we can't seem to find a place for those types of tag teams on the main roster. And if you look at the tag teams, you know, there's very few of them that have success as actual tag teams. You know, we get a lot of hodgepodge guys that are thrown together and end up winning titles, like Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt. You know, both of those guys were kind of struggling, and this, you know, current pairing seems to work. But, you know, again, going back to what I grew up on, tag teams were tag teams. Like, that's all they did. You didn't take two singles and throw them together and make them a tag team. It was, they came up as tag teams. You know, you had the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express and guys like that, and you know, going forward a little bit, you know, the Hardys and the Dudleys and you know, Edge and Christian were more of a singles team, I guess you could say. They got thrown together, but there were a lot of actual tag teams. I'd like to see those teams that work well together stay together and have the opportunity to run through the tag team division, because again, probably the two most successful tag teams on the current roster would be the Usos and the New Day, and those are teams that have stuck together as tag teams for quite some time. So hopefully we find something to do with Sanity in such a way that they end up in the tag team picture, or they do kind of what Undisputed Era has done, and, you know, have a couple of guys that fight as tag team guys, and maybe Eric Young is your guy that goes on and you know, tries to compete for things like the U.S. title or the Intercontinental title somewhere down the road.
Absolutely. Just to touch on your vision of what tag team wrestling should be, if you go back, not you, you know, anybody, me included, if you go back and you watch matches from the Rock and Roll Express, you know, guys that were 6 inches shorter than a lot of the teams they were facing, but they would be kicking ass, and most NWA announcers, I think they worked for Paul Bosch for a while as well, or I know they at least did some shots down there. I could be wrong about that, but I want to say that they were on the same card.
Oh, no, I'm sure they came through Houston at some point.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure I spoke about that, and then I was like, oh, maybe, I'm pretty sure I've seen them on something that I was looking at. Anyway, if you watch and you listen to the commentators are like, yeah, they're, you know, they're Bobby Eaton's 6 inches shorter than so and so, but they're still getting over, or they're winning the match because they're tag team experts. You know, so
right.
Like, you know, the story used to be, you know, if a tag team is together for a while, you know, they build up that rapport and they work good together, so you could take the U.S. champion and the world champion in Ric Flair and Lex Luger and go against the Rock and Roll Express, and the Rock and Roll Express would still have a fighting chance because they're used to doing the tag team thing and not the singles thing. And I agree with you. I think that's what the tag team division should be like today, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my son and I got the chance to go to an NXT. You know, NXT's come through Houston on a number of occasions, and you know, we went to the show. It ended up being Finn Balor's last show on NXT before he got called up to the main roster.
Oh, cool.
And one of the matches we got to see there, I believe it was on this show, but actually, the more I think about it, it might have been a different one because we've been to a couple shows. But we saw the Revival against Gargano and Ciampa, and it was when the Revival were champs, and they had just an absolutely amazing match. And it turns out that they ended up fighting each other on the next takeover that happened after that particular house show in Houston. And it was almost the exact same match, you know, looking at it, because there's one particular bit where I went, holy shit, they did that exact same thing in Houston, which, of course, they used to do back in the day when they traveled to the different territories because you didn't see all the matches, and so they could do the same match over and over again. But that match, I mean, they had the crowd eating out of the palm of their hand. I mean, and it's another one where the story was so simple. You know, the Revival were so clearly the bad guys, and Gargano and Ciampa were so clearly, you know, especially Gargano, you know, because he's that good-looking kid, you know, he's the very definition of a baby face. He sells so well when he's getting his ass kicked. You know, he looks like he's barely hanging on. He's going to pass out at any moment, and you want to root for him to come back and win. And you know, it's those kind of bold stories that really get over with the fans. And when it comes to tag team wrestling, guys that are familiar with one another and can incorporate that type of teamwork that you talk about just makes it that much more interesting. And that's why I'd like to see more of it on the main roster.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, man.
We're going to have to find some shit that we disagree on so we can have some good arguments.
I know, right? I know.
Instead of just agreeing all the time.
My next question is a yes or no question, and I feel like we might disagree on it, and it would be a pretty cool conversation to have. So next was Becky Lynch versus Sonya Deville. All right, so let's say you're head booker again. You're Vince McMahon, the answer to nobody. In the next 365 days, in the next year, do you put either the Raw or SmackDown Women's Championship on Sonya Deville?
On Sonya Deville? Well, that's a tough question. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't have a problem with it. As a straight-up yes or no question, I guess I could see myself saying yes, and I know it's supposed to be just a yes or no question, but let me give a little bit of an explanation for it.
Oh yeah,
I'd like to see the way that it is right now. Here was one of my big problems with the Women's Money in the Bank this year, and we talked about it on our show, was that with the exception of Ember Moon and Lana, every other woman, the other six women in that match, were former champions. And I always prefer the Money in the Bank, and again, this is not a How would I book things? As a fan, I like to see people who haven't had that opportunity get that opportunity, you know, see different people in there. And you know, if you've looked at some of the past winners of Money in the Bank, it's been guys or, you know, females last couple of years, Carmella being a good example. It's been people who have not quite broken through and gotten that main event opportunity, and Money in the Bank was their chance to get it. And so that's what I like to see in that particular match. I like to see people who are fighting to get into the main event picture, not people who are already well established in the main event picture. And so when you ask me about somebody like Sonya Deville, that's somebody different. That's somebody that we haven't seen in that main event picture. So as far as putting a belt on her, I would say probably not, just because, you know, from a wrestling perspective, I think there are better wrestlers out there. But I wouldn't have a problem with her eventually ascending into and giving her a shot against whoever to be at that particular point in time.
Yeah, see, we finally disagree on that one. I don't know what it is about Sonya Deville, but, you know, I just think, like, her character is, you know, she's got a very similar character as Ronda Rousey. And I think she has been training longer than Ronda in the sport of professional wrestling. So obviously she's progressed further than Ronda has in wrestling. And I'm not saying that as a knock on Ronda, because Ronda hasn't been training as long as Sonya, right? But I feel like if Sonya Deville had the same name recognition as Ronda Rousey, Sonya would have been champion a long time ago, you know? So I think given the chance and really to show her skill set and to really put over her being, a MMA badass, I think you've got a great character on your hands there, you know?
Look, I watch wrestling to see wrestlers. I don't watch wrestling to see MMA fights.
Thank you.
I mean, that's always been my take on it. And that's not to say I don't have an appreciation for what, you know, Sonya Deville or Ronda or, you know, Shayna Baszler down in NXT are doing. You know, because we've always, I won't say we've always, but, you know, since MMA's been around, you know, you've had MMA guys that have come through WWE and done very well. You know, you had Ken Shamrock come through. You had Dan the Beast Severn come through. You know, there's been plenty of guys that have come through professional wrestling that have come from that MMA background, and I don't have a problem with that so much. But, you know, again, if I want to see an MMA fight, I'll watch an MMA fight. I'd like to see some of these MMA fighters develop more of a wrestling skill set, just because as a fan, that's what I enjoy watching. And that's not to say that, you know, they can't do MMA moves or whatever the case may be. I'd just like to see them incorporate a little more pro wrestling into the pro wrestling show. And, you know, it's not a big deal if you have that one person. Like, if Ronda was the only one and, you know, she's kind of a, you know, that's kind of her shtick. You know, you get to see this MMA fighter going against pro wrestlers. That'd be one thing. But there are a lot of them coming over now, especially on the win side of things, because of a lot of these girls' relationship with Ronda. So I just hope we don't. It's not that it's a bad thing per se, but it's just not something that interests me as a fan. I'd rather watch, you know, pro wrestlers and people that have worked their whole lives to be pro wrestlers getting that push more so than the MMA star. That's just me personally.
No, I agree with you 100%. I've read so many different things, and I've had people tell me, you know, they're praising Ronda and they think more people should be, you know, more MMA fighters should come in and be like Ronda and stuff. And I'm just like, you know, a couple of them is cool, but if I want to watch MMA, I will spend the $69 or $59 to buy UFC and HD on DirecTV. Like, I watch wrestling because I love wrestling. You know what I mean? And
right.
I'm cool with, you know, Ronda being that one that is, you know, on the main roster that is, you know, this big MMA character. And, you know, I know Sonya's there too, but she has already progressed more into, you know, people look at her as a wrestler. I know her gimmick is kind of a MMA kickboxer, but it's not near as much as Ronda in fans' eyes. And then I think Shayna Baszler is the perfect mixture of it all. Like, she uses a lot of MMA stuff, but she is a good wrestler, you know. And maybe that is a good episode that we should have in the future, you know what I mean, as breaking down some of these female and males from the past and present that are, you know, have an MMA background and how we feel about that and stuff like that. I think that would be a good show.
Yeah, for sure.
So next we had James Ellsworth cutting a promo, and he finds out that he is going to be facing, or he's going to have a match next week against Asuka. How do you feel about James Ellsworth?
I'm glad to see James come back, because he's one of those guys that the fan base clamored for so much. You know, when he made that first appearance and got into this feud with AJ Styles, where he found himself beating AJ Styles, which, you know, having him do it once is one thing, but he started, you know, beating him with some regularity, even though it was always on some kind of ridiculous fluke.
Yeah, if you look up, if you look up James Ellsworth on Twitter, in his bio, it says, beat AJ Styles 3 times.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he's an example of how quickly the modern fan base can turn their backs on guys that just months previous they were, you know, cheering to the top of the Raptors. So I was disappointed to see how quickly the fan base turned on him. And you know, let's face it, Creative didn't do him a lot of favors in terms of, you know, having him go up and fetch the Money in the Bank briefcase on the very first women's Money in the Bank.
Yeah, that was horrible.
That's not going to endear him to the fans in that regard. But, you know, listen, I'm happy to see him back, just because, again, from all accounts, he's a great guy. I think to have a male managing a female wrestler in this day and age is perfect for what this generation of fans likes and wants to see. And so, you know, to have this goofball weirdo guy who, for all intents and purposes, has to be protected by his, you know, his female wrestler, it's a great, you know, kind of turning the old school idea of, you know, men managing men and always coming to their aid and so on and so forth. I think it's fun. I think James Ellsworth is a lot of fun. I'm not a huge fan of intergender wrestling. That's just not my thing. I don't know if it's a generational thing with me. Again, I look at it from, I still approach professional wrestling as a competition. And I know it's scripted, and I know both guys know, or both girls know, who's going to win before the match even starts. But I just, for me personally, I would approach, you know, an intergender match between, you know, like, I'll give an example. There was one down here in Texas at a promotion called Wrestle Circus that got a lot of publicity because, you know, it was a great match from what everybody said. It was Brian Cage, who's now over at Impact Wrestling, who, if you haven't seen Brian Cage, he's a fucking animal.
He's a monster.
Not an ounce fat on him. I mean, he's just cut from head to toe. And he had a match against Tessa Blanchard. And wow. Tessa Blanchard is very, very talented female wrestler. She's one of the best in the country. A lot of folks are clamoring for her to make her way over to WWE, although she just recently signed with Impact, so she'll be there for at least a little while. And they had a match at Wrestle Circus that everybody was talking about, everybody who'd been there. And you can find it on YouTube. It's, you know, I believe it's up on Wrestle Circus YouTube page. But I look at that match, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, here's Brian Cage, who's pushing 300 pounds of pure fucking muscle, just an absolute animal, against Tessa Blanchard, who's a 120-pound, you know, female wrestler. I feel the same way about that match as I would feel if Brian Cage got in the ring with a 120-pound male wrestler. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that she's female. It has to do with the fact that this guy's a fucking animal, and he's got a, you know, 150, 175-pound weight advantage over his opponent. And so I can't look at that match realistically and go, and again, I know it's scripted, and I get that, but I can't get into that kind of match. And I think in a lot of intergender, that's the type of match that you see, or the type of matchup that you see. Now, that being said, you put a guy like James Ellsworth in there with somebody like Asuka, and I can see that as being a legitimate fight because, you know, Asuka looks like she could kick James Ellsworth's ass.
True.
So that particular match, I think, is – that's why I think James Ellsworth works in the whole intergender wrestling community, because he looks like a guy that if you put him in there with a badass female wrestler, she could whip his ass. And that's what's fun about it. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to see, you know, what the Asuka James Ellsworth match turns into. I think those two might surprise us and put on a good match.
Oh yeah. I'm interested to see it as well. I have never heard of that Cage versus Tessa Blanchard match. I am going to look that up as soon as we finish our show today, our episode today. That's
yeah. And listen, I watched the match and again, you know, it's a different style of wrestling than, again, what I came up on and the type of wrestling that I like, in that, you know, it's a showcase of a lot of really spectacular moves, and it's a showcase of unbelievism. But again, when I watch a wrestling match, I think of it as a competition between two people trying to physically beat each other up. And so it just, you know, I certainly appreciated it from, you know, a fan perspective of, holy shit, look at the freaking ridiculous moves that these guys are doing. That's great. But again, just as a competition, it was tough for me to buy into it from that point of view. But listen, those two are fantastic. I'm a huge Brian Cage guy. I think that guy's a fucking beast. He's a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, Tessa Blanchard is a blast as well. So, yeah, definitely check them out. Wrestle Circus in Austin, Texas. They're doing a lot of great shows, a lot of hot shot, and a lot of bringing in a lot of huge names. They always have gargantuan names on that card. They've had, you know, John Morrison's been through there, and Ricochet's been through there, and, you know, Guerrillas of Destiny, they're always putting on great shows. So check those guys out. You can see a lot of their stuff on their YouTube channel. There's some good matches on there for sure.
That's cool. I've got one more question, but before I ask that, I wanted to say that you were talking about Tessa Blanchard. I do think I'm in agreement with most of the IWC, the Internet Wrestling Community. I think she's one of the best in pro wrestling today, and I'm pretty sure. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she's either dating or engaged to Ricochet. So I figure.
Yeah, she was.
Oh, are they not together anymore?
Yeah, they broke up recently from what I heard. I haven't heard any news that they've gotten back together, but I know that they split recently. And Tessa's in an interesting, and I'm not sure about how she's perceived backstage. I've read rumors about things about her having some heat backstage with certain people, and I'm not going to throw that out there as fact because I don't know it. So, I had a chance to chat with her at WrestleCon this year, and she was absolutely delightful and just super great to everybody who came by. And everyone that I've spoken with personally, who has had personal interaction with her, has talked about how great she is as well. So, you know, it could very easily be one of those things where, you know, people online with an agenda want to see certain people not do well. But yeah, so far as I know, I don't think her and Ricochet are together anymore. But, you know, let's face it. I mean, just she's not going to have any trouble on name recognition alone.
getting into wherever
she wants to wrestle. So she's going to be okay.
Yeah, that's true. I agree very much so. So my last question, the main event of SmackDown, I guess 2 days ago now, was Daniel Bryan versus Harper, you know, formerly Luke Harper, now Bludgeon Harper, Harper Bludgeon, whatever you want to call him. But anyway, my question is, I personally think that Daniel Bryan is one of the best wrestlers on the face of the earth. Would you agree with that statement, or do you think, because, you know, there's a sect of people out there that think Daniel Bryan's not near as over as what most people think. It's his yes chant that really got him over or got over. So would you put Daniel Bryan up there with some of the greatest wrestlers on the face of the earth today?
Yes, I would. I definitely agree with the idea that the yes chant got him over, because it certainly did in a certain regard. But that doesn't take away from what he does in the ring, and what he does in the ring is spectacular. I mean, he's really, really, really good. I feel a certain way about. I feel the same way about Daniel Bryan as I do about the whole Rusev Day thing in a certain respect. I think fans love to chant shit at shows. At least American fans do. It's one of the things that I love about watching New Japan is their fans just sit there and watch the matches and they clap when they're supposed to clap and they be quiet the rest of the time and, you know, they don't try to make it about themselves. So that's always, I always appreciate that. I think the yes chant definitely and the whole yes movement definitely got him over with the fan base, but you know, to suggest that that's the only reason that he's over is just an irresponsible thing to say in my estimation. If you're a fan of wrestling and you're, you know, like we just talked about, you've got these MMA fighters who don't necessarily have a good wrestling background and you're not seeing a lot of wrestling moves in their matches, if you want to see great wrestling, you watch Daniel Bryan, and that's just, there's no, You can't argue that. People who know wrestling, people who, and I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about, you know, fellow wrestlers, people who are well-regarded within the industry will tell you that Daniel Bryan is one of the most talented guys that there is. And the fact that he's not an extremely good-looking guy, you know, he's not going to be like your Roman Reigns kind of guy that, you know, women just love because he's hot, you know, and all that kind of shit. No, he looks like a little, you know, trollish guy. That's and he doesn't give a shit about that. And neither does Brie Bella, so let's face it, he's doing just fine for himself.
True story.
But he's not going to, you know, he's not going to get over on his good looks. He's not going to get over on his size. You know, he's not going to be one of those, you know, guys that you watch just because he's, you know, he's huge. It's just a, you know, the spectacle of him. So he's been able to do what he does because he's such a fantastic wrestler, and he gets it, and he knows how to sell, and he's in the right place at the right time, and you know all the things that, you know, guys like you are going to have a much greater appreciation for once you get in the ring and you start learning how difficult it is to do it. He does all of those things as well, if not better, than the overwhelming majority of guys in rent today, and that's what makes him as great as he is.
That's really cool to hear, man. That's really cool. I would love to talk with you more sometime about Daniel Bryan. I would like, eventually, I want to get into looking up his independent stuff and any Ring of Honor stuff that is on DVD that's been recorded. I'd love to go back to that. Maybe we could talk about that sometime. But Chris, man, it has been an absolute blast having you on the show today. Before we go, why don't you walk us through one more time how we can find you, tell us about your show and what it's progressing into and starting next week and what the new name of it is. Tell us everything we need to know, my man.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on, man. Yeah, the show is called The Spees and the Benchmark Show. You can find us on Twitter at Spees Benchmark. That's S-P-E-E-Z Benchmark, at Spees Benchmark on Twitter. And go to tinyurl.com/Spees Benchmark to take you to our YouTube channel. We will have two YouTube shows every week. It'll be Monday nights, 10:15 Central Time, right after Monday Night Raw, and Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time. So make sure to hit that subscribe button on YouTube and check out the show. Hit us up on Twitter. You can find us at Spees Benchmark, or you can follow us individually. My Twitter handle is at Chris Spisak. That's S-P-I-S-A-K. And at Benchmark Silky if you want to follow my co-host. So hit us up online. We're always anxious to hear from the fan base and hear your feedback on the show. And once again, to you, my friend, good luck to your good luck in your venture into the wrestling business. I hope all goes well with your training, and I appreciate you having me on the show, man. I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
I appreciate it, Chris. I appreciate the kind words. I appreciate you coming on the show. If you have the time, maybe we can start making this a weekly thing. At the very least, I would like to have you come on, you know, if you don't have the time, maybe once every 2 weeks. But if you have the time, maybe we could do whatever day you wanted to do. You know, we could do one morning every week and just have a topic of our choice, you know. So you know, ponder on that, and we'll get together about it more. But a big shout out to Chris for coming on the show today. Do not forget to check out his show every Monday and Thursday. And don't forget to follow this show on Twitter at World Class Daily. That's World Class DAILY. You can follow me at Fox the Podcaster. We're on Facebook, World Class Radio. To everyone out there listening today, and to the 819 people that downloaded Tuesday's show, send my wife a tweet at Court Scarpetti and tell her she did a fine job on Tuesday morning. Thank y'all, everyone, for tuning in.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?